Secondary palatal management refers to a group of surgeries that are used to treat velopharyngeal insufficiency or hypernasal speech, which is not uncommon following a cleft palate repair. There are several reasons why you may have hypernasal speech. One is a persistent fistula in the roof of the mouth. So when speech is occurring and you're trying to direct all of your airflow out through your mouth, some of the air is going through the hole in the roof of the mouth. Another reason for velopharyngeal insufficiency or hypernasal speech is that the palate just isn't long enough to reach the back wall of the throat. So anatomically, the back wall of the throat, where you can see this if you just look in the mirror and say, aw, is also where the adenoid pad is located. So adenoids are a lymphatic tissue, which is very prominent in childhood and tends to get much smaller as we age. This adenoid tissue can build up and it can be a problem blocking off a patient's nasal airway. So there is an old adage that says never take adenoids out if your child has a history of a cleft. And please disregard that. It shouldn't be taken out for no reason, but there are plenty of reasons why we recommend taking out that adenoid tissue. If your child has hypernasal speech, the first thing that they will need is speech therapy, where they will work with a speech therapist to see how much better they can get with just simple training and work with techniques. If they reach a plateau and still have hypernasal speech, the next step will be performing a study called a nasoendoscopy, and this is typically done by the ENT doctor. They put a small spaghetti-type camera in the nose, and then while your child is speaking, they look to see the relationship of the palate coming together with the back wall of the throat and how tissue moves in general around the velopharynx. Now, this kind of closes like a sphincter back there. If there's still a persistent hole when they're making sounds where it should be completely blocked off, we have to figure out a way to help them completely block this off. So there are typically three different surgeries that we're going to plan. One is called a pharyngeal flap. The pharyngeal flap involves taking some tissue from the back wall of the throat, lifting it up kind of like a drawbridge, and incorporating that tissue into the soft palate. Now, it doesn't completely block off the nose. We make it narrow enough that there's still some small, what we call lateral ports, where air can still flow through the nose for breathing and during certain types of speech. If you want to visualize this, look at your uvula and imagine if you pulled it back and thumbtacked it to the back wall of your throat. There's going to be a central blockage, but there's still going to be some openings to either side. Another surgery that may be recommended is called a sphincter pharyngoplasty. If you look in your mouth at your tonsils, there are these webs of tissue that run up and down behind your tonsils. We take that tissue and pull it back and sort of incorporate it and tighten down the tissue in the back wall of the throat. So that leaves just a smaller hole that needs to close. The third type of surgery involves lengthening of the soft palate. The most common technique used is called a Furlow-Z palatoplasty. And by rearranging the tissue of the soft palate, we can make it just a little bit longer and function better. So in preparation for one of these surgeries, you start by seeing the speech therapist who makes the recommendations. The second visit is usually with the ENT to perform the nasoendoscopy. If they see that there's a significant amount of adenoid tissue or if the tonsils are enlarged, it's important to treat these prior to the secondary palatal management procedures. So a tonsillectomy and adenoidectomy may be performed to basically set a good foundation for us to be performing a pharyngeal flap, which is typically the most common surgery that we're going to be using. The time between these two surgeries is in general about 6 weeks. In the interim time between the adenoidectomy and the secondary palatal management, you should expect that your child's voice will actually get worse and they'll become more hypernasal. As you're getting close to your secondary palatal management surgery, it's important that your child be very healthy when they undergo this procedure. So we don't want any upper respiratory infections for 2 weeks prior to their anesthetic. So we don't want excessively runny noses, coughing, sneezing, or fevers, because this can make the anesthesia more dangerous and also affect our healing. This surgery is performed under a general anesthetic, and you should expect that your child will stay overnight in the hospital after surgery. They are able to go home when they are on room air, meaning not requiring any supplemental oxygen, and they're able to take a liquid diet and have their pain controlled with oral medications. For approximately 3 weeks after surgery, it's important that the food that they're eating is very soft. It would be very painful to swallow like a large bolus of food, so we start with clear liquids in the hospital and move to full liquids or a pureed kind of baby food consistency, and then they can gradually increase to softer foods. As long as the food is chewed up well before they swallow, it's basically in a pureed form. It's important to avoid things like seeds and nuts during the early healing phase, as they can get lodged in the nooks and crannies. After eating, it's good to always swallow some water, some sparkling water or something like that, to just help kind of rinse the food down. Depending on the age of the child, arm splints may not be necessary. During the several weeks after healing, you can make your child more comfortable by having a cold air vaporizer or a humidifier in their room so that their mouth and nose don't dry out too much while they're breathing. While they're sleeping. Early on after this surgery, you'd expect them to be more hyponasal or more muffled until the swelling starts to go down. Now let's talk specifically about the risks associated with this surgery. First, we do this with a retractor in the mouth called a Dingman, which is metal and kind of hooks on the teeth. So there is a possibility of knocking out a loose tooth or chipping a tooth just by use of this type of retractor. There's also a risk for more significant bleeding with these surgeries as opposed to just cleft lip surgery. Now, one of the biggest things that we're concerned about is this surgery may work too well and block off the airflow through the nose more than we intend it to. And this can result in hyponasal speech or more muffled speech. This can also be more severe, that can lead to obstructive sleep symptoms or obstructive sleep apnea. You can tell if your child has a potential for sleep apnea because they snore a lot when they're sleeping, and you may hear some gaps in their breathing, and they may be quite restless while they're sleeping. The diagnosis of obstructive sleep apnea is made with a sleep study. We would expect these symptoms to be apparent early after surgery, but if they persist, the workup would include an evaluation with the ENT and possibly rescoping after completing a sleep study. If it turns out that obstructive sleep apnea is present, there's a couple of paths we can go down. If it's mild, your child may be treated with just CPAP, which is a way of delivering some extra oxygen through the nose while they sleep at night. If it's more significant, we may need to take down our flap, but you don't have to worry about losing all the gains you've made in speech. With kids that need their pharyngeal flap taken down, most will maintain the gains they've made with speech because during this surgery, we've made the soft palate bulkier and longer. So taking down the flap may improve their obstructive symptoms while still maintaining the gains they've made in the resonance with their speech. It's also possible that this surgery may not work well enough and they might still have persistent hypernasality. Again, speech therapy is our first line, but we may need to repeat that nasoendoscopy to see what anatomically is going on so we can make decisions about what the next step is. Most of your follow-up after a surgery like this is going to be with your speech therapist, and evaluations are going to be made with the ENT and possibly with a sleep study if necessary. Most of these surgeries are performed during childhood. The earliest is typically about 3 years old, and I think my oldest patient was about 42 years of age, but most of these are probably going to be between the ages of about 4 and 10 years.